Shabbat shalom. Good to have everyone here this morning. What an exciting time we have in the Lord, and a wonderful day. It's a good day, amen? And we're thankful for the Lord, and thank God for all of you here. So we're going to get right started in here. We've got a lot to do today, and so we're going to get right started in it. So today's Torah portion, it's Torah portion number 13, and it's the name is Shemot. Everybody say Shemot. Shemot comes from the word Shem, which means name. It also means character. And it's just in the plural, in the feminine plural, the O-T is the O, so it's names. In Hebrew, it means names. So Shemot, say Shemot. So this whole Torah is about names. Now this, I think, overall, just listening to people's conversation and people talking about this whole Torah, I'm thinking we're just about almost there, but we're missing it just a little bit, what this teaching's really trying to show us. And that goes for how the video went and everything, just missing it just a tad. And so I can't tell you how many hours that I spilled over this Torah, because I just felt that, I sensed that in my spirit, that something's missing. What are we missing? And the whole goal is that we take our time through this. So we laid out basically the beginning of the outline. We laid that out last night, and we stopped here on 61, and it says, "To this the Pharaoh replied, 'Who is Yah, that I should obey his voice and let Israel go?' Not only did Pharaoh reject their request, but he imposed even harsher decrees against the Israelites, commanding that they now deliver the same amount of bricks without any straw supplied to them. The overseers then flogged the Hebrews foremen because they were unable to meet the imposed quotas. When the foremen appealed to Pharaoh for mercy, they were accused of being idle, since they listened to Moses and Aaron and were told to keep the quota of bricks despite the lack of straw. And the foremen blamed Moses and Aaron for the worsening their situation, and Moses complained to Yah." So there's that effect that when the people complained to Moses, who did Moses always turn to? To Yah, and said, "Lord, I'm here. I'm doing what you're telling me to do, but we're not getting any results." And that was kind of common throughout his leadership, taking them through the wilderness and the Mount Sinai. That's kind of what was common, that the people complained and he went to Yah. But he had to maintain his relationship with Yah so they didn't get sideways. And remember, he came real close to getting sideways with Yah when he was at the water, getting the water from the rock. And he did something he wasn't supposed to do. So this portion ends with God assuring Moshe, "You shall soon see what I will do to Pharaoh." You're going to see what I'll do. You're not seeing nothing yet. You're meeting the resistance, but you'll see. "He shall let them go because of a greater might. Indeed, because of a greater might, he shall drive them from his land." He's going to tell them, "You got to get out of here." And he's going to be so willing for them to get out. He's going to give them people and gold and silver, something to get. He had enough, because he knows that he's fooling with someone that he's not seen before, the power. So let's go through chapter 1. Names are so important. Israel's increase greatly in Egypt and Pharaoh's oppression. So in Exodus chapter number 1, verse 1, is where our Torah portion starts. "And these are the names of the children of Israel who came to Mitzrayim with Jacob, each one with his household: Reuben, Simon, Levi, Yehuda, Issachar, Zebulun, Benjamin, Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher." Now, if you notice that this listing is different than any listing of their names from before. It's out of order. Just take note of that, especially when you go to study, you take note of that. What is in a name? What is in a name? So with the emphasis, really, this Torah portion, the way it was taught, the emphasis was just about the name, what's in a name. And so it gives a lot of instruction to that in that reference. A Hebrew name gives identity. A Hebrew name reveals a characteristic of Elohim in the person. A Hebrew name is a self-fulfilled fulfilling prophecy. The name of the sons of Israel each represent different respects of redemption. What is in a name? So we have Reuben's the first one. And then we'll go through each passage that applies to each one of them. And in Exodus 3:7, and Yah said, I have indeed seen the oppression of my people who are in Mitzrayim, and I have heard their cry because of their slave drivers, for I know their sorrow. So Reuben means indeed seen. I've seen. And then you have Simeon in Exodus 2:24, and Elohim heard their groaning, and Elohim remembered his covenant with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. So Simeon means he heard. He seen and he heard. And Levi in Zechariah 2:11, and many nations shall be joined. It means shall be joined to Yah in that day, and they shall become my people, and I shall dwell in your midst, and you shall know that Yah of hosts has sent me to you. And then now we're on Judah's name. Judah's name in Isaiah 12:1, and in that day you shall say, I thank you, Yah, though you were in rage with me, your displeasure has turned back and you have comforted me. So Yah, Judah is, I thank you. In Issachar, in Jeremiah 31:16, thus said Yah, hold back your voice from weeping and your eyes from tears, for there is a reward for your work, declares Yah, and they shall return from the land of the enemy. So Issachar means what? Reward. Zebulun, in 1 Kings 8:13, I have indeed built you an exalted house, an established place for you to dwell in forever. So Zebulun means exalted house. Benjamin, Yah, in Isaiah 62:8, Yah has sworn by his right hand and by the arm of his strength, no more do I give your grain to be food for your enemy, nor do sons of your foreigners drink your new wine for which you have labored. And again, this is projecting what will happen when Christ returns the second time, because all they have experienced now, they get and it gets taken. They get and it gets taken. They build and somebody else takes it. They dig a well, somebody else takes it. That's been the entirety of what's happened in the life of Israel from the day one. But he says, Yah has sworn by his right hand, which represents Benjamin, which represents also who? Who sits at his right hand now? Yeshua, and he says, by the arm of his strength, no more do I give your grain to be food for your enemies. That's going to all stop. When Yeshua returns, all of that's going to stop. There won't be any more of that. And they'll be able to relax in Yah. So I want you to keep that in mind. This is what happens when you look at the name. You're going to also see the character. And then we have Dan. This is where it completely goes out of order. Because who's the last born? Benjamin. We already had him. And this listing is how it's listed. So we have Dan. In Genesis 15:14, but the nations whom they serve, I am going to judge. Dan means what? To judge. And afterward, let them come out with great possessions. Naphtali, in Song of Solomon, chapter 4, verse 11, your lips, O my bride, drip as the honeycomb. Honey and milk are under your tongue, and the fragrance of your garment is like the fragrance of Lebanon. So Naphtali means honey. And then we have Gad in Exodus 16, 31, and the house of Israel called its name manna. And it was like white coriander seed, and taste of it was like the taste of cakes made with honey. So Gad is the coriander seed, the coriander seed. And we have Yeshua making a proclamation. He said, I'm that manna. He makes that proclamation, I'm that manna. Asher, and all nations shall call you blessed, for you shall be a land of delight, says Yahweh host. Malachi 3:12. And all nations shall call you blessed, for you shall be a land of delight, says Yahweh host. So Asher is blessed. And now we have Joseph. In Isaiah 11:11, and it shall be in the day, that day, that Yah sets his hand against a second time to recover the remnant of his people who are left from Asher and from Mizraim to Patros and from Cush and to Elam and from Shinar and Hamath and from the isles of the sea. So Joseph means to recover. And he was positioned in a spot to do what? Not only did he recover, but he brought recovery to a lot of people. So we see that right at the beginning of the chapter, he makes sure that as we're going into this Shemot, the names, that we don't forget that he established the 12 tribes that have been established in Israel to multiply. In Exodus 1, verse 5, and all those who were descendants of Yaakov were 70 beings, as Joseph was already in Mizraim. And Joseph died and all his brothers and all that generation. And the children of Israel were fruitful and increased very much, multiplied and became very strong, and the land was filled with them. Then a new sovereign arose over Mizraim who did not know Joseph. And he said to his people, see, the people of the children of Israel are more stronger than we are, than we. Come, let us act wisely toward them, lest they increase, and it shall be when fighting befall us that they shall join our enemy and fight against us and shall go up out of the land. So they set slave masters over them to afflict them with their burdens, and they built for Pharaoh supply cities of Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they increased and grew, and they were in dread of the children of Israel. And the Mizraites made the children of Israel serve with harshness, and they made their lives bitter with hard bondage and mortar and brick and all kinds of work in the field. All their work which they made them do was with harshness. Then the sovereign of Mizraim spoke to the Hebrew midwives, of whom the names is Zipporah, and the name of the other is Puah. And he said, when you deliver the Hebrew women and see them on the birthstool, if it is a son, then you shall put him to death. But if it is a daughter, then she shall live. But the midwives feared and did not do as the sovereign of Mizraim commanded them and kept the male children alive. So the sovereign of Mizraim called for the midwives and said to them, why have you done this and kept the male children alive? And the midwives said to Pharaoh, because the Hebrew women are not like the Mizraim women, for they are lively and give birth before the midwife comes to them. So Elohim was good to the midwives, and the people increased and became very numerous. And it came to be, because the midwives feared Elohim, that he provided household for them. And Pharaoh commanded all his people, saying, throw every son who is born into the river and keep alive every daughter. So you can see the oppression got stronger and stronger. And what we learned last night, You got to make sure that you create a firm footing, because it's coming. Oppression is not something that it's not, you, it maybe might happen. It's inevitable. It's a sure thing. It's coming. There's going to be oppression. There's going to be all sorts of things you're going to come up against. But if your foundation is wide, you can stand firm on the Torah. You can stand firm on the Word of Yah. But if you're trying to serve God, like we said last night, and you're trying to walk a tightrope serving God, well, I'm not willing to give up everything just yet, and this is how you are. You know what's going to happen when oppression comes? You're not going to last. And so he's trying to show us in this that we got to work on our character. And so I don't want you to get so caught up that you're just trying to find out a few definitions for your name. And that's a wonderful thing. You can do that. But how's your character going to be is going to be what's going to keep you. And we'll see this in a little while, because we have something that's been going on for a long time, for a few thousand years been going on, this fight on how we pronounce the name of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. It's never been settled. Still going on. But we're going to give you some of the newest stuff that's been found out, and see where that leads us. In the second chapter, the birth of Moses, Moses flees to Midian, and Elohim hears Israel's groaning. In verse number 1 of the second chapter, and a man of the house of Levi went and married the daughter of Levi, and a woman conceived and bore a son, and she saw that he was a goodly. Remember the word there? What is the word there for good? Tov. Remember that. Tov. It's where we find the tet. It's where we find the enlarged tet and the anomalies in our Porsche, in our Peshat. We look at that and we see it in the parties. That enlarged tet. What does the enlarged tet resemble? A basket. It resembles a basket. And we're about to put him in the basket. So he sees that he's good, and so he enlarges that letter in the manuscript, so we pay attention to that. We're paying attention to the word Tov there, because he's goodly, a child. And she hid him for 3 months. And so I'm pointing that out to you now. You have this verse that we just read in the word Kitov. It's translated handsome. The child was handsome or good. And so I just pointing that out to you, that tet would look just like that. It would be enlarged. So you're reading along Hebrew, and all of a sudden you see this enlarged letter. You pause. You're gonna. It's a way to make you pause and really consider what you're about to read. That's what these enlarged letters for. And you're going to search that letter out. You're going to see how does it apply to us. And you're going to look at it in the translation. Of course, we have it at the bottom. And the woman conceived and bore a son. And when she saw that he was a handsome or a good child, she hid him 3 months. I'm not going to comply to the rules that's been handed down, that we turn over all of our sons and they throw them in the Nile River. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to hide him. I'm going to do everything I can, if it costs me my life, to protect this child. Because she saw something in him that she wanted to protect. And when she could hide him no longer, she took an ark of wicker for him and coated it with tar and pitch and put the child in it and laid it in the reeds by the edge of the river. And his sister stood at a distance to know what would be done to him. So we see in the book of Jasher, chapter 68, verse 24, and at the end of 2 years, then the child grew up. She brought him to the daughter of Pharaoh, and he was unto her as a son. And she called his name Moses, for she said, because I drew him out of the water. And Haran, his father, called him. Now, these are just the different names. Moses had, I think it's 8 different names. And it could be 9 if we we bring in another reading, but he was called different things in throughout the text. So his father called him Kabar, meaning buddy, like my little buddy. Because remember, he was a handsome and he was a good child. For he said that it was for him that he associated with his wife whom he had turned away. And Jacobet, his mother, called his name Yekutiel, meaning called of God. Because she said, I have hope for him to the Almighty, and God restored him unto me. And she puts him out by faith. She's trusting Yah. Pharaoh's daughter finds Moses floating in a basket. And the little girl's there and says, you want me to find somebody to nurse him? She goes, get his own mother. She said, yeah, find somebody and I'll pay him to do it. They'll be paid to take care of this child. And his own mother got to take care of him. How incredible that is. Wonderful thing. And Miriam, his sister, called him Jared, which means dropped. And she descended after him to the river to know what his end would be. And Aaron, his brother, called his name Abba Zanuk, means abandoned father, saying, my father left my mother and returned to her on his account. And Kehath, the father of Aram, called his name Abador, because on his account did God repair the breach of the house of Jacob, that they should no longer throw their male children into the water. Because what they were living on, the promise that Jacob had told them. We got a covenant promise. When all your male children are being tossed in the Nile, how many of you know you're not thinking that covenant promise is so far from you? But he says, now that Moshe has been rescued, he's brought it back on the account God did repair the breach. Because they're feeling like this is done. We're done now. If all the males are getting destroyed, what's going to happen to the group of people? It won't be long. They won't have no progenitors. It's going to be over. And then their nurse called him Abasako, which means anointed, saying that in this tabernacle was hidden for 3 months and on account of the children of Ham. And all Israel called his name Shemaiah, the name of Yah, son of Nethiel, for they said, in his days his God heard their cry and rescued them from their oppressors. And Moses was in Pharaoh's house and was unto Bethia, Pharaoh's daughter, a son, and Moses grew up among the king's children. In 1 Chronicles chapter 4 and verse 18, and his wife, Yehudiah, bore Jared, the father of Gedor, and Heber, the father of Zeko, and yet Ketiel, the father of Zanoah. And these were the sons of Bethiah, the daughter of Pharaoh, whom Mir took. Now, what's her name? Bethiah, which means daughter of Yah. And it goes on to talk about it in how that she got so caught up in this child Moses. Now, what did she see? He was a goodly child. She got so caught up in the character that he had at a young age that she converted over and became the daughter of Yah. And when they left in the Exodus, she went with them. Pharaoh's own daughter went with them. In verse 5, and the daughter of Pharaoh came down to wash herself at the river, and her young women were walking by the riverside when they saw the ark among the reeds, and she sent her female servant to get it. She opened and saw the child, and see the baby wept, and she had compassion on him and said, "This is one of the children of the Hebrews." And his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and call a nurse for you from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you?" And Pharaoh's daughter said, "Go." And the young woman went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this child away and nurse him for me. Then I shall pay your wages." So the woman took the child and nursed him. And the child grew, and she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she called his name Moshe, saying, because I have drawn him out of the water. And in those days it came to be, when Moshe was grown, that he went out of to his brothers and looked at their burdens. And he saw the Mitzrayim strike a Hebrew, one of his brothers. So he turned this way and that way, and when he saw no one, he struck the Mitzrayim and hid him in the sand. Remember what we talked about last night with this? Moses' initial reaction was, "I can do this." Why was he so quick to do it? He was so well trained. He was trained in martial arts. He was trained in all sorts of fighting tactics. He led armies. This guy was no slouch. And he could take a guy out with his bare hands, and that's what he did. He took him out. He killed him immediately, struck him, and he was dead. But that was not Yah's way to deliver his people. And so we see that, what did we see there? We see a flaw in his character. Now, how we know we talk looking at his character? Because the title is Shemot. The word Shem can also mean character. And we want to make sure we consider the character. And you'll see how important that, what I'm saying, when we get to the next chapter, you'll see how valuable that is. And he went out the second day and saw two Hebrew men fighting and said to the one who did the wrong, "Why did you strike your neighbor?" And he said, "Who made you the head and judge over us? Do you intend to kill me as you killed the Mitzrayim?" Notice what he's seen. So he witnessed a character, and now he had a standing. This brother had a standing against Moshe. "Who made you a ruler and a judge? I watched you kill somebody. You're going to tell us to quit hitting each other?" You see the problem he's got? He had a flaw in his character, and God's got to fix that flaw. And let me tell you, we see the fix, and it's not an easy fix, but he fixes it. And Moshe feared and said, "Truly the matter is known." And so Pharaoh heard of this matter, and he sought to kill Moshe. But Moshe fled from the face of Pharaoh and dwelt in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. Now this is the beginning, this is the process of him getting that flaw fixed of his character. He's got to get that fixed, and this is the process of it. And the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came to draw water, and he filled the troughs to water their father's flocks. But the shepherds came and drove them away. Then Moshe stood up and came to their rescue and watered their flocks. And they came to Reuel, which means what? Shepherd of God. Now, who we're speaking of? Who's Reuel? So this is Jethro. This is just one of his, and instead of him, he has eight, he's called by eight different names throughout the scripture. And you can take some time if you want to look at that and go apply it, you can. Their father, and he said, "How is it that you have come so soon today?" And they said, "The Mitzrayim rescued us from the hand of the shepherds, and he also drew enough water for us to water out the flocks." And he said to his daughter, "And where is he? Why did you leave the man? Call him and let him eat bread." And Moshe agreed to dwell with the man, and he gave Zipporah, his daughter, to Moshe. And she bore him a son and called his name Gershom, for he said, "I have become a sojourner in a foreign land." What does Ger mean? It means foreigner. So again, notice these statements in the scripture. They name the children and they make a statement after. You'll find the meaning is right there. And it came to be after these many days that the sovereign Mizraim died, and the children of Israel groaned because of the slavery, and they cried out, and their cry came up to Elohim because of the slavery. And Elohim heard their groaning, and Elohim remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And Elohim looked on the children of Israel, and Elohim knew. He knew. In chapter 3, the burning bush, Elohim's name, the Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. In verse number 1, and Moshe was shepherding the flocks of Yitro, which means what? Overflow. What I said overthrow for? Overflow. His father-in-law, the priest of Midian, and he led the flock to the back of the wilderness and came to Horeb, to the Mount of Elohim. Now, how many know where this location is? What's Horeb another name for? What mount? Mount Sinai. See how God's positioning him? He's positioning him right where he's going to bring him back much later. So, and how many know Moses knew the journey to get there because he'd been there, but he goes a different route to get there when he takes the children of Israel because he's not driving the bus. He could only do what Yah told him. Yah had to bring him to certain locations to get their character right. He was working on their character. Remember that. And so how many know that all of our names, no matter what you find in the Bible, we all have character flaws, and we got to work on those things. We got to let the Torah help us do that. You can find your name, and your name might be Yah Lives or something like that. Okay, if that's the case, you don't say, I made it. We all have character flaws, and we got to make sure that we don't just take a definition and think that we already meet the qualifications to that definition. Remember, the character projects, the name projects out what our character should be. And we're to live up to that character. And if you don't have anything that is meaningful, then you go to the Lord in prayer and you say, Lord, regardless if your name has anything meaningful, your character has to be shaped like his. There's no getting around that. In verse 2, and the messengers of Yah appeared to him in a flame of fire from the midst of a bush. And he looked and saw the bush burning with fire. And the bush was not consumed. And Moshe said, let me turn aside now and see this great sight, why the bush does not burn. So isn't it amazing how Yah gets his attention? Because he's about to give him lesson number one. He's about to give it to him. He's going to get his attention. And Yah saw that he turned aside to see, and Elohim called to him from the midst of the bush and said, Moshe, Moshe. And he said, here I am. And he said, do not come near here. Take off your sandals, off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is set apart ground. Lesson number one. You don't just approach. You don't come because you're trying to see the sight. Now you got this bush burning and not being consumed. It's interesting. You're on the backside of a desert somewhere, and you've been there a while. You've been shepherding, and you see something that's new. What is going on here? There have been many fires lit. There have been many wood burned all down to the coal, but he's seeing something he'd never seen before. And he's telling him, take off your feet. He's teaching him that this encounter you're about to have is set apart. It's a set-apart ground. So he's trying to get him to understand that. And we're going to see his response. And he said, I am Elohim of your father, the Elohim of Abraham, the Elohim of Isaac, the Elohim of Jacob. And Moshe hid his face, for he was afraid to look at Elohim. I mean, see, right there, for the first time in his life, he has to hide his face because he's afraid of this encounter that he's having. He recognized something. He recognized this is the Most High for the first time in his life. So what is he doing? He's working on his character. He's getting to realize that you're encountering. Now he's going to have a conversation. We're going to see that he goes back and forth. He bounces back and forth. And Yah said, I have indeed seen the oppression of my people who are in Mizraim, and have heard their cry because of their slave drivers, for I know their sorrow. I have come down to deliver them from the hand of the Midianites and to bring them up from that land to a good and spacious land, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to a place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hittites, and the Jebusites. And now see, the cry of the children of Israel has come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Mitzrayim oppressed them. And now, come, I am sending you to Pharaoh. Now, why was he there? Because he was doing what? He was running from Pharaoh, and now Yah saying, I'm sending you back to Pharaoh to bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Mitzrayim. And Moshe said to Elohim, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring the children of Israel out of Mitzrayim? Notice his response. Who am I? So he's trying to downplay the fact that he can't do it. I've never done this before. This is not what I do. Right now I'm a shepherd. It's what I do. It's not, it's got to be some mistake. You have to be talking about someone else. What is that indication of? Moses is very aware of his character flaws. He's aware of them. Because he wouldn't have made a statement if he thought he was. He's aware that he has some issues that he's got to work on. And he said, because I am with you, and this is to you the sign that I have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Mitzrayim, you are to serve Elohim on this mountain. Where he's bringing him back to? This mountain. You're going to come back and you're going to meet at Mount Sinai, and they're going to have the giving of the Torah, which is going to be written eventually for them. The 10 words are going to be given. So he's speaking of that encounter. And Moshe said to Elohim, see, when I come to the children of Israel and say to them, the Elohim of your fathers has sent me to you, and they say to me, what is his name? What is his name? They're going to ask this question. What shall I say to them? In Exodus 3, verse 14, and Elohim said to Moshe, I am that which I am. And he said, thus you shall say to the children of Israel, I am has sent me to you. Now I left the footnote in there in our Bibles. There's a footnote, and this can get real broad as far as study. But in the footnote, we see that he's making some, these words that he uses for I am, it has an expression of Yah's in there. So I want you to see that. I wanted you to see that. It's derived from Heyah, which means to be or to exist. So you think about those words. So he's giving him an answer, but it's not full. I am that I am, or I will be what I will be. That's not a full, it's not full. There's still something you, what else is there? And so he answers them in a way that, to me, when I read this, is still kind of where we are when it comes to the name or the tetragrammaton, the yod, hey, vav, hey. It's still kind of where we are. Everybody's still trying to figure out, how do you say it? What's the correct pronunciation? And there's some interesting things that I had found in looking at this. And Elohim said further to Moshe, thus you are to say to the children of Israel, Yah, Elohim of your fathers, the Elohim of Abraham, the Elohim of Isaac, the Elohim of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name. How long? Forever. This is my name forever. So what does he tell him his name is? He just gives him, I am that I am, or I will be that I will be. And he gives it to him kind of in this, it's sort of like a, I don't know what you would call it. Like when you ask somebody to figure something out. Because that's what he's going to have to do. He's going to have to figure it out. And what's people been doing since then? Trying to figure it out. But we missed the point. Every generation has missed the point because we're trying to figure it out. If we're going to be the person to say it right, then we got it. We're going to find the magic or something like that. But notice what he says. This is my name forever. And he's going to start, and this is my remembrance to all generation. That word remembrance in our Bible, in the Hebrew Bible it says, and this is my mentioned name to all generation. Mentioned, meaning you're saying it. And so with that understanding, people's finding, we got to be able to say it. But what do we say? Do we try to say something different than Yah said himself? Is that our goal? Because that's sure been the goal of everybody else. And then you got the internet's full of sacred namers, and they're all fighting each other, and they threaten each other, and they threaten it to the point that you're not saved if you don't say it this way. They make it a salvation issue. And it's a terrible thing, because the moment that happens, because what is a word that is directly connected to Shem other than character? There's a word. It's a character of Yah that we learned a long time ago. What's one? It's a word attached to, real short, brief word. It's a character of Yah. It's called unity. 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 And what happens, people are not in unity when you're not doing it right, or you're not saved if you're not doing it like I'm doing it. There's no unity there. So how can that be a character of Yah? So what you think you got by pronunciation, you don't have at all, because you're in disunity. You're not operating in the character of Yah. So we're missing it. You know, we have to take a time to slow down. And that's some of the things that I saw with just listening to the video. But you got to be careful with this is it. And the rest is not. We have to be very careful. We are commanded to know Elohim's name. So if you look up here, I put it in Hebrew. So we have the Yod, the He, the Vav. This is modern. Everybody say modern Hebrew. Modern. Meaning nowadays everybody uses the Vav. But in biblical Hebrew it was Wah. So which one do we use? Again, what I'm going to show you today is, let's not get all wrapped up on which one, because you'll carry that same mentality in everything. You'll start doing something because you're trying to display the character of God, and you look at someone who's not doing it, and somehow you're instantly judging where they are. The moment you do that, you just got out of character. Do you understand? And that's this whole lesson. And I said, Lord, I want to find what this really needs to teach us. What do we really need to learn from this? And let me tell you, this is very important, very important. So in Isaiah 52, 6, therefore my people shall know my name. I'm just going to ask you a question. What if we replace name with character? They shall know my character. Now, who displayed the character of Yah better than any man? Who displayed that character? Perfectly, he displayed it. Do you see Yeshua in any of his words, any of the things he said? Do you ever see him get in a debate about how to pronounce the name? How we should say it? Never did. And it's caused a huge controversy. This is since 2001. This controversy was really going strong. It was getting hot and heavy. People wanting to duke it out online. And in 2017, here comes this wonderful fine, and it's like it trashed everybody's belief system, and this is it now. And you can almost bite into it because it's that heavy of a revelation until the Lord slows you down and says, wait, let me show you this. Elohim's name, hidden and revealed. So what we see here in this particular verse, and God said moreover to Moses, thus you shall say to the people of Israel, the Lord God, this is how English does it, right? We use the Lord God in the place of the Yod Heh Vav Heh, which I'm under the opinion what we should have done, if we don't know how to pronounce it, we can't assign an English name to it. Because we don't know the pronunciation. Why don't we just leave it in the consonant form and just leave it at that? Why is that important? Because it's mentioned over 6,000 times in the Bible. Do you understand? 6,800 times in the Bible it's mentioned, and maybe we should have just left it like it is rather than trying to assign a name. So the Jews come along first, and they assign Adonai because Adonai means Lord or Master. So they're going to assign Adonai to it. Well, so we got Adonai, and then English comes along, and they assign Lord, capital L-O-R-D, or they use the Lord. Because if you just assign Lord, it don't work with grammar when you're saying it. So sometimes they got to throw the Lord in there so it makes the grammar correct. So there's run into all sorts of problems, you see? And how important is this? Because this whole Torah is about the name. It's about Shemot, names. So we're going to learn something here. And God, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob, and he sent me to you, this is my name forever. The word forever is Elohim. See, Le'olam. And this is my memorial or my mentioned name to all generations. And so with that in mind, people go on this tear that they got to figure out how to say it because it's got to be mentioned. And I'm going to emphasize that it's not as important as you think. The name. In the second century, the Romans banned the Jews from keeping the Torah and speaking the name of their God, Yod Heh Vav Heh. They forbid that. You can't speak it. Now, were they speaking it? If you forbid somebody from doing something, it means they were doing it. But we're going to show you that it's not been hidden that much. A rabbi named R. Hanan B. Tereon was burned alive while wrapped in the Torah for reading the Torah and proclaiming the divine name in public. You'll find that in Tirach, Aboda, Zara, Folio 18a. So think about the stuff they went through. Burned alive for reading the Torah in the public and proclaiming the name. He was a contemporary of Eleazar ben Petra 1 and of Hephlata. The Talmud states that the sages transmit the four-letter name of God to their disciples once in seven-year period. The Babylonian Talmud in the Kedushin 71, Rabbi Barbar Kenna in 250 to 300 CE. Now all of these sources, you can go and look it up and do all the reading if you want. There's a lot of stuff there, a lot of information. Other rabbis would disagree with Rabbi Kahana and say the name was transmitted once, not once, but twice in a seven-year period. This discussion of the Talmud does show that during the 3rd and 4th century, the name of God was being spoken and taught by the rabbis to their disciples. So what they would do, you can go and read it. I didn't want to put it all in here because it's too much to put. What they would do is they would take They would take some time to, every so often, they would get their disciples and they would go through a ceremony and they would put them in water. The water would be up to their ankles because they never could speak the name of Yah unless it was over water. And then they had all these students that went through all the courses, and now it was time for them to hear it for the first time, and they would reveal it in their ear. And this has been passed on from generation to generation. But the reason this is just coming to light now is because nobody sought the Jewish literature to come when it comes to the pronunciation of the name. No one. It was always sought other resources. Nobody was seeking Jewish resources, not even the Jews who was saying they didn't know. So they just would say that. We don't know, so we don't say it. So we replace it with something else. When you replace it with something else, you don't only replace how it's said, you replace its character meaning. And that's dangerous. It's dangerous to do that. You don't do that because he says you shouldn't add to or take away. So what are you doing when you do that? You're adding to and you're taking away. Both of those things are happening. And so we see, as we have just discovered, there were rabbis who kept the name of God hidden by transmitting the name Yehovah. Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh only to their disciples through a water ceremony. Now, you notice I'm saying it in the modern Hebrew all the time. The Vav doesn't necessarily mean it's translated with the V. If you're speaking the biblical Hebrew, you're going to say the Wah. So it'd be Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. So keep that in mind because that's important. It's an important distinction. So their disciples threw a water ceremony by questioning that. But the question now remains is, what is the actual name of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh with vowels? Did rabbis believe the name to be Jehovah? Did the rabbis believe, but believe it or not, there were 16 rabbis who did believe that the name of the Almighty was and is Jehovah. Now, this is literature. This is not me saying what I feel about it or them saying. This is all written down historically throughout time. They believed it to be Jehovah. Now, because we sought no Jewish material, but in English, we came up with Yahweh. It's the most touted pronunciation of any in history right now. So what happens when the majority's gone? It's easy to just say, well, most everybody's saying this, so it's got to be right. But is it? And does it matter? It's very important. These rabbis are dated from the 13th to the 18th century, 1800s. We just read earlier from Western scholars that no Jewish believer believed the name of Yah was Jehovah, but that it was Yahweh. See the controversy? And that Jehovah was a Christian name for God. So let's see if this is true from rabbinic sources. The first source comes from the Tanukhi Zohar, 1300, regarding the sect of the vials and where they were hidden. The secret of the vials in Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh and the secret of the word, only in your father did Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh set his love. That word is kashak. Kashak, Deuteronomy 10:15, is because he has set his love, kashak, upon me, therefore will I deliver him, because he has known my name. That's in Psalms 91:14. And so, when you see, let me just show you something when you're studying. You see it in Deuteronomy 10:15. We're going to do both of them. So, here, only the Lord took delight in your father to love them. That word is kashak. So in that word, in the word kashak, we have the vowels, saved. We have the holam, the shiva, and the kamatz. So that this is what the Jews are saying, that he hid the vows, but it was hidden from the ones who weren't looking for it. But for those who knew what it was there for, they knew it, and he hid it in words. So I did a few of these just to help you kind of get along, especially if you're taking some of this on as your own study. And in Psalms, we read, because he has set his love upon me, in verse 14, Kashak, again, the Holam, the Shava, and the Kamatz is hidden in the name. The first thing we need to understand is that the vows were a secret. The Jews did not go around yelling the name and using the name in a conversation like we do today. The secret vows are hidden in the words in Deuteronomy 10:15 and Psalms 91:14. Only in Hebrew will you understand and see the secret he is referring to in these verses. The common word in both verses is the Hebrew word kashak, for love. Now, the normal Hebrew word for love is hava. It's hava. So why is there these changes? They change because you're not going to get hava to have those vowels. They won't be the same. The Hebrew kashak has a meaning of burning or a longing type of love, while hava has the more of a meaning of respectful manner in treating someone well. So it's more of a love for a friend. But this burning desire of love is where he hides the vows at for the word yod heh vav heh. But what does kashak have to do with the secret vows of yod heh vav heh? The Zohar turns the Hebrew word for love in the kashak into an acronym, the acronym being for the vows holam, shava, kamatz. The very name of the three vows found in the name of yod heh vav heh. So now we're saying that that's the ones, but how do we know that? Because it's actually in over 1,010 manuscripts with vowel pointings. That's how many they found the yod heh vav heh with vowel pointings already. Been there for a long time. That's my whole point. We've been fighting over something and how to pronounce, and the vowel pointing has been written in the manuscripts over 1,010 copies already to date. Probably more than that now because they're finding them every day. Think about that. That's since 2017. So we're years later, and so there's probably more. We're talking about the actual vowel pointings on the word yod heh vav heh is there. It's already written with their own pen. It's not put in later. This has been when they're writing it. It's found in the manuscript. So my whole thing, when I come across it, I says, why have we been fighting over how to pronounce the name when the vowels have been there the whole time? So we never sought Jewish resource to figure that out. Because if you don't learn Hebrew, if you don't know Hebrew, now remember, this is in Jewish resources that's never been translated into English. So in English, do we have the vowel points? We don't have the vowel points in English. I've never had a Bible that has the vowel points in English. The closest one you get to is the King James Bible. When they translated Jehovah. Because they came to a problem that they couldn't just put Lord because it didn't grammatically fit. So they had to come up, so they used Jehovah very few times in the King James Bible. Not many, very few times compared to 6,800 times that it's written. In other places, they just put L-O-R-D. But we got caught up in the whole thing trying to figure it out when God's just the only thing, the simpler form, he says, look, you got to get your character right. Your character's got to be like more like my character. And the very name of the three vowels found in the name of Yod Heh Vav Heh, which allows the name to be pronounced as Yehovah, The Zohar confirms the Hebrew manuscripts that contain all three vows in the name of Jehovah and not the vows of Adonai, as we discussed earlier. Now, I didn't discuss that portion. You go and read it yourself. I'm going to give you the source books to find. There's two books. You can go read it for yourself. I can tell you, you read up through it, and at the end, you're disappointed. That was my case. But the information, the resource is incredible. But the people who come across it, they're touting themselves like they found something. Like there was nothing that nobody found it before. Everybody knew it from before, especially Jewish rabbis. They knew it for a long time. But they were not looking in the right area. They weren't looking in the Jewish resources to find it. When they found it, they realized this thing been here all along. The next rabbi to tell us how the name should be pronounced is Rabbi Menachem Zioni. In the 14th century, in his commentary book on Exodus 3:15, he states the following. Now remember, these commentary books were not translated. So for English speaking and researchers and scholars, they're not looking in these resources because they can't read them. And they can't translate them while they're reading them. Until people come along who speak good English and speak Hebrew, they can translate all these things. The name Jehovah, there is also a secret here received by tradition in the vows of this name. This is my name forever. Leolam. For they are the vows of the great name. And you find this in New York Jewish Theological Seminary, manuscript 1030, folio 46A. The vows of the great name of Shavah Holam Kamatz is found in there. And I put an example again of that. So you see this example? What's the E represent? Shavah Holam. And the A is the Kamatz. These are the three vowels that's in Olam. And it means forever. That's the word forever. So all along the text of Scripture, as we read in the Exodus, all of this is happening throughout it. Again, the very same vowels mentioned in the Zohar for Jehovah, the great name Rabbi Menachem, is referring to, and we just drop them down. We take them from where they are here, drop them here into the Yod, Hey, Vav, Hey, see it? Drop them in there, that's the vowels, and we have Jehovah. Or is it Yehovah? You see? So that's where the confusion happens. Everybody's saying, well, what is it? Does it matter? Maybe what he's saying is, don't get caught up in all that. Make sure the character's right. And I can assure you, when you get finished with this study, you'll figure out the same thing that I figured out. He's not interested in that. If he'd been interested in it, he just plainly said it. Especially Yeshua, he just plainly said it. This is it. Then Menachem goes on to say, in the mnemonic is who in heaven, Shaka, can measure up to you in Psalms 89, 6 and 7, the word for heaven, shaka, in the passage is not more than common word in Hebrew, as in the Hebrew word shamayim, for heaven. And what is shaka? It represents the vowels of Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh. Again, this is the words of heaven is both there, but one time they translated shaka, and another time they translated in its normal translation, shamayim. Because in that word, we have, again, the Shavah Holam Kamatz, right here. Again, turning the Hebrew letters, Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, into Jehovah. And finally, Menachem finishes with another strong statement. So I put these in just to show you. For who is the skies, that's the words heaven, can be compared, and we took that word and we translated it into what? Skies, because we've done it in the English. And that's commonly happens all the time. OK? can be compared to the Lord, who among the sons of the mighty can be likened to the Lord. And that's Shekah. And again, but here in verse 6, and the heavens shall praise your wonders. The word is Shamayim. You see it in Hebrew? So I'll just, again, point that out. When you go through the study, you'll see this. In Psalms 119, verse 88, in your loving kindness, spare my life, so I shall keep the testimony of your mouth. In verse, keep in mind your mouth, the word your mouth, very important. In 119, 89, forever, O Lord, your word is fixed in heaven. Forever, we had that earlier. What is it? La'olam. And again, the vows are secretly held in this, which the Jews, according to their all of their writings, knew that that was the vow pointings for the. But again, to think that it's never been written so open to everybody to see, it has been. Like I said, in over 1,010 manuscripts, it's been written. When you see the word of Yah in there, the vowel pointing is in there. It's not like it's hid, but it was hid. I don't know if that makes sense. It wasn't hid, but it was hid. Because nobody sought those resources. That's the reason. We had all these fights going on and separations, and this is how we're gonna say it. And all along it was always revealed. I will guard the testimony of your mouth, referring to La'olam. What is the testimony of your mouth? The palate is the holam, the teeth is the shavah, and the tongue is the opening, which is the kamatz. Thus far the words of the man who revealed the secret to me. Now this is a quote from the guy who says, it was a time that I was standing in the water, ankle deep, and all of a sudden, he revealed the words of the mouth. And what was the words of the mouth? The palate is the holam, the teeth is the shavah, and the tongue is the opening, which is the kamatz. This has been passed on from one generation to the next in a Jewish custom that this would, how to say, or what was the vowel pointings for the name, and they wrote it. They didn't stop writing it. They kept writing it, and they wrote it in all those manuscripts. And I just can't see how, for the life of me, how all of the seminaries, theological seminaries that we have in the United States of America, and nobody has pointed this out and taught people that. So all this time, because they didn't do that, there's this big outrage on, we saying it right, you're not saying it right. Because there's all sorts of versions. I only covered a few of the versions. Jehovah, Yahweh. That's only a few. They got Yahuwah. They got Yehoshua. It goes on and on and on. It's nonstop. And that group says, if you don't say this, you don't even come here. We don't want you. So that's not the character of God. There's no unity in that, you see? And so we have to take that in consideration. I'm saying all this for us to learn the importance of this Torah portion and what he's saying here. And the secret of the vows was hidden in the Hebrew word that contained them. The words are like La'olam and Shaka and Kashak. These are not the vows for the Adonai and are not the vows to pronounce Yahweh. These are the vows for Yehovah. There should be no doubt that Rabbi Menachem believed and taught in secret the vows of Yehovah as he received them. You can also see the manuscripts about how he received it in secret in Muchi. And you can see it in this. This is the source for that. The next rabbi we can look at is named Shabbatiah Shofar, the scribe who was the greatest grammarian in the 17th century, who collected and corrected the Hebrew prayer book. He wrote a letter to another rabbi on September 14, 1608, where he states the following. It is not known the saying of the sages, referring to the Babylonian Talmud, in the Pesachim 50a, in this world it is written Yod Hey Vav Hey, in red Adonai, in the world to come. It will be written Yod Hey Vav Hey, in red Yod Hey Vav Hey, and behold, where it is read as Yod Hey Vav Hey in the world to come, then its vowels will be Sheka, the Sheva, Holam, and the Kamatz. Now this was something that he said. Now if you want to, how many want to, if you're interested in it, you can, and you want to do more study on it, you can. This is a book by Nehemi Gordon, Shattered the Conspiracy of Silence. Now this guy proclaims that he's the one who broke the ice and really found out the actual vows to Yod Hey Vav Hey. So he touts that around. I think it's the behavior of that touting is not, he missed the point. He missed the whole point. Because the character of Yah needs to be found in us. And so then this is a good resource. You can get the book. I got the book, read the book. And there's a lot of information in there. And I can see his excitement and all the stuff that he had. But once he dived in, so it took him 15 years to find five manuscripts that had the vowel point in it, 15 years of the research. And then once he got the right information and downloaded to his computer, in 30 seconds he found hundreds and hundreds, thousands of manuscripts that had it. So it was there the whole time. But nobody sought that resource because the people that had the resource didn't even pronounce the name at all. They used Adonai. So if you want more resource, here it is. Here's another guy, this Dr. Al-Ghazar. The name of Yod-Heh and the question mark Hey, hidden and revealed. So he shows where it's hidden. It's hidden in the words, which is all true. It's hidden in the words. We proved that point. I gave you several examples. Hidden in the words, but it's revealed because this is one of the manuscripts. This is a picture of the manuscript on the cover of his book. Let me see that. Sheva, Olam, Kamatz. This is the Kamatz. The double dot is the Sheva, and the Olam is the dot, single dot. So it's put there. It's for everybody to see it. It's not like it was hid, but it wasn't hid. It was there, but nobody looked there. This is more like a paper, more than an entire. It's a book. You could buy it on Amazon, but it's not very long. And so at the end, I put this together so we could kind of see it ourselves, and it didn't actually, for some reason, it didn't stay together. So you won't see it like I had it. I had it all pretty. You can see all these boxes here. I had the Yod, the Hey, the Vav, the Hey, but they're lost in the dark. And so I just wanted to show you that Sheva is the E, that's that sound. And then you have the Kamatz and the Holam. And so you would pronounce this, we say Yah, and that's the safest thing, Yah. So you would pronounce it Yehovah. That would be how it's pronounced. But then, if we say it with more biblical Hebrew, it would be Yehovah. So, you say, where we are now with all this? We're right where we started. It's no different. You're right where you started. So you can say, well, now we know how to pronounce it. And where is that going to get you? That'll get you separated from your brother, and you'll never be able to minister to him. That's where it'll get you. But it's for you. Because he's talking about a blessing. So you give the blessing over the child, You take the child and it's in private. It's not a public event. It's in private. And you pray the blessing over the Lord and you do the best you can. That's what you've been doing. And what you've been doing has been working on your character. It's no magic. You're not going to say it right and all of a sudden it's going to be like you get hit with a light from heaven and da-da, you're there. And the confetti drops and everything works out. That's not what this is. What it is you are putting yourself in a position so the character of God can come out in you. How many understand that's important? It's important. And so he says this in Zechariah 14:9, and Yah shall be sovereign over all the earth, and in that day there shall be one Yehovah or Yehovah or whatever else you prefer. And his name, one. In Psalms 148, verse 11, sovereign of the earth and all peoples, rulers and all judges of the earth, both young men and maidens, old men and children, let them praise the name of Yah, for his name alone is exalted and his splendor is above the earth and the heavens. But how many is going to do this? Some people say, well, this is not for me. We don't do that. He says, sovereigns of the earth and all peoples, both young men and maidens, old and children, let them praise the name of Yah, for his name alone is exalted and his splendor is above the earth. Very important. And so in Exodus 9:16, for this reason I have raised you up in order to show you my power in order to declare my character in all the earth. What he's trying to declare, his character in all the earth. So instead of spending the time that we spend in trying to figure out how to say the Yod-Heh-Vav-Heh, the Tetragrammaton, we got to spend more time looking at an example, the example of Yeshua. And let's read that. Let's go to Hebrews. Hebrews chapter 1. Verse number 1. And Elohim, having of old spoken in many portions, in many ways, to the fathers by the prophets, has in these last days spoken to us by the Son. So who are we talking about now? The Son. We're talking about the Son, Yeshua. Whom he has appointed heir of all, through whom also he made the ages, who being in the brightness of the esteem and the exact representation of his substance and sustaining all by the word of his power, having made a cleansing of our sins through himself, sat down at the right hand of the greatness on high, having become so much better than the messengers, as he has inherited a more excellent name than them. So what happened when Yeshua got his character right when it comes to being in the character of his father? He inherited a name that was more excellent than the name that he had. He inherits a name. So I want you to... excuse me. I want you to understand how important it is for us to not focus on so much on how you pronounce the name, but do we live up to the character of the name? Are we actually doing that? Are we taking the time necessary to make sure that we're doing that? I'm going to read one more passage to you, and then we're going to close. In Numbers chapter 6, verse 22, and Yah spoke to Moshe, saying, speak to Aharon and his son, saying, this is how you bless the children of Israel. Say to them, Yah bless you and guard you. Yah make his face shine upon you and show favor to you. Yah lift up his face upon you and give you peace. Thus they shall put my character on the children of Israel, and myself shall bless them. Think about it. When you have the character of God in your life, what is it going to equal to? Is it going to equal to sin or blessing? Is it going to enter cursing or blessing? If you have his character, you're going to be blessed. So our goal should be able to, we should, and you can't know God's character unless you study the Torah. You won't know it. If you don't know his what he likes and he don't like, how can you know it? So how many see it's important? This is the book, the Bible is not a book of suggestions. It's not suggesting things to us. I'm suggesting this to you. You can decide if you don't want to, that's fine. He's telling us if you want to have the blessings of eternal life, that's what we're all here for. We seek eternal life. We want to make sure that we're with him in the kingdom. So in order to get there, you're going to have his character. And you got to know his character and what it is. And so we put more emphasis on how to say a name that it, we don't operate in the character of God. And before you know it, we distance ourselves. We don't want to associate with nobody. That becomes terrible because it's not the character of God. Let me understand that. It's very important because when you operate in the character of God, it's going to show in your life. It's going to be expressed out of you. It's what is going to happen. It's not going to be something you have to force to do. It's going to be automatic. You know, when you're in a situation and you got to make a decision to do something, you're in that situation, and all of a sudden something's said or something's done to you or done to somebody you care about, all of a sudden you're going to have this raging rush of water. It's going to be a flood that comes, and it attacks every receptor in your body, and it's going to produce something. That's what it does. You're either going to have the God character come out, or you're going to have the Jesse's going to come out. It's going to come. And the thing you can do to stop it, the only way you stop is what you should have done yesterday or the day before, a week before, a month before. When you apply yourself to the Torah, you could have stopped it. But when that comes, it's going to happen, and you're going to, people say, well, man, oh, that slipped out. It didn't slip out. It was always there. It didn't, like, jump on you this morning. You was carrying that for a long time, and it came out. Same thing that happened to Moses. He gets out there, and he sees his brothers being under attack, and all of a sudden, in an instant, it rushed in, and when it came out, it wasn't God's character, and he killed a man. And God had to take him on the backside of a desert somewhere and let him shepherd sheep for 40 years until he got it out of him. And then Moses was a meek man. Because if he'd have had that same character, he'd have killed every Israelite on their way to Mount Sinai. He'd have killed them all. But he didn't have that character anymore. He was patient with them. He was meek. He was more soft-spoken. You understand? God got it out of him. It took him 40 years to get it out of him, but he got it out of him. And so I know that don't sound very appealing to take 40 years to get something out of us, but it depends how hard-headed we are. And let me tell you what softens us. The Word of God softens us. It softens it up. It gets it where we can receive what he has for us. And so my prayer is that you'll continue this. There's still much more, but you'll continue it on your own. And you'll study it out. But I just wanted to save you because you're going to come across different videos while you're on there, and you're going to see this, and you're going to go, this has got to be it. Don't get caught up in what's got to be it. Get caught up in the whole meaning of this Torah portion. You got to make sure that the name that you speak, the character is the same. What character is it? And that's what we saw in Moses. Moses was the greatest example in this Torah portion. He didn't have that character, even though he was goodly. Remember, he had that goodly look that the tov was on his life. There he was. But enough to save his life, but it wasn't enough to be in leadership. It wasn't enough to be somebody who speaks out on behalf of Yah. And so we find that his character got sharper. It didn't stay there. It got sharper as he, because remember, he was afraid to approach, and then there come a time he said, Lord, show me your glory. Man, that's powerful. Because he was getting more and more like him, more and more like him. And so we're in his image and his likeness, are we not? Have he not created man in his image and his likeness? So he started with the good character, but the sin has destroyed that. And so we don't realize how much stuff we still have in us. We get saved and we have a little chill bump every now and then. We feel like, hey, I'm doing good. We don't realize until a situation happens. And we let something fly. But what flew didn't land on you last night. It was always there. And it came out because you got to work on that character. You got to let God's word come in and change every part of your being. And so the more you get in the character of God, the closer you get to him, the more you're going to want to stay. You're going to spend more time. You get so close with him, you want to spend, you don't get enough. That's very important for our life. So I pray that you got a hold to this and you saw it. There's so many ways to apply the vows, but they wouldn't apply for us. We can try to apply them ourselves. The only difference I've seen is what pronunciation you want to use when it comes to modern Hebrew or biblical Hebrew, whether you use the wah or the va. So Yehovah or Yehovah. But again, can we say that to be exact? That's the thing. Because putting vowels in is not all it is to it when you're looking at Hebrew language. And it goes into much more detail. But if you like to study it yourself, there were some resources there. You can look at that. And also you can look at a guy named by Jeff Boehner. Jeff Boehner. He's got some stuff on it, very brief stuff, but you can look at that also. So anyway, I appreciate you this morning. Thank God for you. We appreciate you for being here this morning. Thank God for the time that he's given us to go into the Word and take some time to look at it so we can be better equipped. How many of you know we're going to have to be equipped? We're going to have to make sure our character's right, because there's going to be some times where we might have to go through some things. There'll be some times of suffering. And in our country, think about our country right now. You think everything's just fine? There's things going on. Come January the 6th, it's going to tell a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff's going to be told January the 6th. And I've been praying, mentioning that to the Lord. I've been actually, you got to do it on purpose. You got to say, Lord, come January the 6th, I want to make sure that my mind is right and my heart's right. It doesn't matter what happens, you're still God. Now, I'm not asking you to get us out of it. I'm asking you to give us power to stay, sustain in it. And you need to be praying the same thing. Because it doesn't matter what happens, he's still God, and he's not going to change. It won't change that. And how we reflect in his character is going to be determined how we take what's going to happen. Because it's going to come January the 6th, things are going to change in this country. It's going to change. And you might see things you never thought you'd see. You never thought you'd see it in your lifetime. You might see that, and it might not happen. I don't know. But I can tell you one thing. The stage has been set, and everything is positioned for it to happen, and ain't nothing going to stop it. Nothing. Yah has tried everything he could to get man to realize that he's trying to extend himself to him. But there comes a point you can't stop what's coming. We have to be prepared and ready. And you prepare your life by getting the right character and the right attitude and how you approach it. And if you succumb to fear after January 6th, if you let fear be the guiding thing that guides you, you're in for a long haul. Because you can't fear. That's not a character of God. And perfect love casts out fear. So you got to work on your love toward God. And it's got to be that sincere, passionate love, burning love. It's burning inside of you. You can't get enough. You don't care what happens or what it takes, you can't get enough of that. And so that's the kind of love you have to have. You have to be that passionate for the Torah and the things of God. So I want you to be praying, because what's today's date? Today's the 2nd. So you only have a few more days. And January 6th to be here. If you choosing to sit down at the TV and watch the whole event, then you can do that. I can tell you one thing. If you choose to do that, you should have been praying before that day rather than that day. Pray before that day, because it's going to be an event to watch. There's no doubt about it. But we ought to be praying for those in leadership and whatever God decides. Because remember, God decides. He does. The power of the king's in his hand. He decides. And whatever that decision is, we got to say, you know what? You're still, yeah, don't change anything. Nothing at all. We're still going to serve him, but we know But whatever happens, what timetable we're on, we'll know that through the Revelation series. It won't be long. You'll figure it out real quick where we're at, because things are going to shake up. Either way, they're going to shake up. I've been praying, Lord, give us 3 more years so we can teach the Torah and we can learn it and grab hold to it. That's been my prayer the whole time. This has been my prayer since 2000. When I don't know when it was on that cruise, but it was 2015 or something. Been my prayer the whole time. I had a sense in my spirit that God was going to give us that time. And whether he does it under a freedom or an oppression, it's still the time he gives. So either way, it happens. I can tell you under the oppression, maybe we do it more sincere. So regardless, I'm just saying, Lord, whatever you want, that's what we want. Whatever you desire. And if you'll trust the Lord, you'll see what I'm talking about come January the 6th, because everything will be decided. And at the end of the day, God says the final word. Amen? Who has a prayer request?